Pete Yost here for the Unbuild It podcast with a word about our sponsor, Huber Engineered Woods. There are really three reasons why I think Huber Engineered Woods stands out, and it's a big part of why they're a sponsor of our Unbuild It podcast. First, they develop systems of products. The products are compatible and integrated, makes our jobs a lot more easy in the field and when specifying. Second is superior tech support. There are really good website resources that they have developed for the application of their products, but they also have an outstanding 800 number tech team that really knows their stuff. And the last is a really active technical research and development team with whom I've done a lot of work over the years, and I have a lot of faith in the information I get from them when I have questions about product performance. So that's it. That's our high performance sponsor. Now onto the podcast.
Okay, for this group of builders roundtable discussion, Sashco was very kind, and they're allowing us to use what is kind of their lobby conference room to record. We were all in Denver for the Building Science Symposium. Sashco said we have a space. So if you hear audio problems with people in the background or manufacturing noises, this is on site. Give us a little credit. Give us a little slack, I should say. We're trying to provide you some content, and we took the opportunity to record here today. So thank you, Sashco, for the space and your support of the podcast. I'm Jake Bruden, and welcome back to the Unbuild It podcast. Today, I am joined by Shane, Luke, and Jackson. We have been recording a few builders roundtables that have been publishing prior to this and after this. This is somewhere in the middle. We don't even know which order we're going to publish in. So maybe you haven't seen any yet, and this is the first one. You'll have to figure it out on your own. We're just four builders at different points in our career with different businesses and different business models talking about how we do things, which is exactly what we did at dinner last night, which is what we'll do, what we did at lunch today when we sat out there and ate lunch. And it's just, this is something that's been amazing for my business, is making friends with people elsewhere in different parts of their careers and then going, what have you screwed up recently that I could try to learn from and not screw up? And let me tell you about how I screwed this thing up and sharing. So we're glad you're here. And today we are going to talk about subcontractors and that working relationship. So I'm seeing a theme here, actually, because we're going to talk about clients. And we're going to talk about our employees, and then we're going to talk about subcontractors. It seems like we're all having business problems, but we're not. So I want to start by, in the last 6 months, I've had multiple times one of my project managers come to me and be like, have you ever worked with this plumber before? Do you know anything about this plumber, or do you know this painter? Hey, do you mind talking to the guy who owns the paint shop and seeing what his opinion is of this painter or whatever it is? And then me having to be like, why are we having this discussion? Like, I thought we had somebody locked in for this project. And they're like, we do have somebody locked in for this project, but I'm trying to line somebody else for the next one because I'm tired of working with this person for whatever reason. There's lots of personalities. People are busy. People are bad at customer service, whatever it might be. My team has decided to take ownership of that and try to find the right people across the board if somebody that we're currently working with is not all of a sudden the right person. And I wanted to start the conversation about, like, from that standpoint, like, we're looking for a new subcontractor. You and I we're on the same page, yeah, at least for the beginning. Like, that's great. I love the fact that you're taking ownership of this. I love the fact that you're looking and doing research and you're worried about how the company's going to operate. Let's bring this person in, and our entire project management team is going to sit with them and talk with them and discuss how their business works and discuss how our business works and expectations. And if it feels like it's going to be a good fit, they leave that meeting with a request for certificate of insurance and a subcontractor agreement that they need to review and sign. Yeah. So that's step one. With us, is anybody else's step one dramatically different? What is your vetting process like? Is it calling other builders? Is it going to look at work?
For me, if I am ever trying to onboard a new trade, whether it's because I'm, need to replace another relationship that's, you know, gone bad, or a lot of trades recently have retired. You know, a lot of the subcontractor pool are old and they're, you know, phasing out, or just building redundancy in my trade pool. I'm typically going to the other trades that are already in the core of my like vetted team. And so like a good example is if I needed to find another, you know, finish carpenter or siding and trim carpenter, I'll first ask my painter, who's a really skilled painter that I know and trust. And he's probably followed all of the best in my area, you know? And so I'll start with another trade who's probably worked alongside other good trades.
Yep.
And that's been kind of my best data point. And it's a small industry. I mean, it's a small world in San Diego. We were just talking that, I feel like the supply demand equation is extremely out of whack. Like the supply of skilled, qualified trades is very small. It's almost like everyone knows everyone in our industry. So it's not like there are a ton of unknown players out there that are just operating at some level of performance that you haven't already kind of heard about in some way, shape, or form. So that's more or less how I'm starting, is like I'm kind of getting a, you know, warm and fuzzy from another vetted, trusted trade that I've already worked with for a number of years, and then just engaging with them and trying to have a similar like courting conversation as I do with clients. Like, hey, here's how I work. How do you work? Like, here are some of the like very nuanced, like standard operating procedures and things that I'm doing differently maybe than other people you've worked with. Like, are you okay using this material? Like, tell me about, you know, your failures. Why are you doing things the way that you're doing? Just trying to get to a level of comfortability where we've worked all that out in advance of like stepping onto a job where like now costs are being incurred and risk is being, born effectively. And then, you know, into the contracting side of it, similar to you, you know, working through a proposal is kind of where I start. Like, hey, here are the plans. Here's the scope of work. Let's talk through it. Make sure we're interpreting what we see the same way. If there's unknowns, then like, let's carve out an allowance for this until we figure it out, vet out a proposal and a scope of work, at which point the proposal should be getting signed along with a subcontractor agreement, which includes different language than a proposal will.
Yep.
With, you know, verification of certificate of insurance.
I've done the exact same thing. One thing I also add to that is a site visit. As much as I can to schedule something to go see the actual work being performed. So if it's a new tile contractor or something that I need, I'll actually contact an interior trim carpenter that I've used for a long time. I know he's on really nice high-end projects. Who's the tile guy you've seen, or the plumber, whomever? And I'll just say, well, can I contact that builder, and or can you somehow organize it for me to go, you know, see their work and meet with that potential contractor? That's been great, super valuable. And then there's another builder that I just have a high regard for, not in our competitive area. We just bounce things off each other. I'm like, who are you using for that or this, or who have you seen, or are you having trouble with this guy? Oh yeah, I used him and I'm done with that guy. You know, so yeah, I think utilizing the contacts and the relationships that you have in the professional side, you know, is a really valuable way to find some new subs.
We're kind of blessed. Like, it's a small town for any, like, even if you were to work in New York City, your area that you work, everybody knows each other. Yeah. They're all on the same job sites with the same folks. It's a small circle of, there are times where when we get, I had somebody recommend a concrete guy to me, and I immediately called the yard, the plant, and said, what can you tell me, like dispatch, what can you tell me about this concrete company? And they're like, ah, they normally work for these three or four guys. I was like, okay, that's all I need to know. We're not going to work with them because I know that those guys are bottom of the barrel. Mm-hmm. The only thing they do is how cut rate can we do this? Mm-hmm. And I know that every other sub that I know that does work for them hates working with them because it's like, I don't care. We don't need that. Don't put that in there. You're wasting time. You're wasting money. And it's like, if those four companies are the only people that that guy works for, his crew is not going to take to working on our jobs and then having to go back and do that. Like, it's not going to work out for us. Like, yeah, there's an off chance that it might work, but it's pretty unlikely. Mm-hmm. So like we have that small community thing. It is the entire industry is built on relationships, right? Yep. And knowing who to call to suss out what the relationships are and who you can trust or not trust. If we're looking for a painter, I know the guy who owns the paint store that we buy stuff at, and he'll have no problem going, they're not going to be a good fit for you guys.
Yeah.
Like, it's across the board. It's relationships. Mm-hmm. Once you get to the point where you're ready to work with a subcontractor, We already kind of touched on subcontractor agreement. I would say that one of the things that we do to try to make things a little more enticing to work with us, our subcontractor agreement has all the, this is how the warranty process is going to work. This is the level of insurance that you're required to carry, all those things in it. But it also says that we're going to pay within 21 days. Nobody else in town in my market is saying anything similar to that. There might be somebody that's like, hey, if you need money, just tell me and I can cut you a check. We're guaranteeing that it's not even going to take you 30 days to get paid. We're trying really hard to make it very simple to work for us. But outside of that subcontractor agreement, our project management sales pitch that we would give to a client is kind of the same sales pitch that we give to our subs. Like, you don't have to line out where the toilet goes. We ask you to come and check that our project manager put it in the right spot. But our PM is going to mark where the toilet goes. He's going to mark where the vanity is. He's going to mark on the floor if it's a floating vanity or if it's not, if it goes all the way to the floor, if it has a furniture base, things like that, so that you know when you walk in, you could probably come to the job without a set of prints and without the scope of work and plumb the darn job. There's no reason why you shouldn't want to come and work for us because we're not asking for a discount for that.
Yeah.
You're going to make more money on our job probably than somebody else's because we know that somebody has to mark it out. And if we mark it out the first time and we ask you to check it, it's more likely to be right and not have to get torn out, no matter what it is. It's not just that. Or posting QR codes or drawings in every room where it's like, well, I can click this and it has all the appliance schedule in it. Like trying to make their life easier across the board.
It's setting them up to be more successful, and they'll see that in you. So if you, you know, if you're planned well for them, when they come on site, they can be more profitable as well. You pay them quicker. All that sort of stuff adds up, and they'll be committed to you. They'll do a great job. They're going to want to versus them coming on the project and being like, got to line this out, got to line that. They're just going to get exhausted, and it's just not going to be a great job environment for them. So, yeah.
So what do you guys do to try to encourage subs to want to work with you?
I think it's kind of like what both of you all were just saying. I think for us, we want our subs to know that they're valued, like that they are.
I'm just kidding.
That they are, they're part of the team. It's not like they're just in the distance. Like you all are part of the heart of this team, and for us, we get really proud. Like we tell our clients too, like we want you to meet our trades, like the people that are actually working on your home.
And I'm sorry.
You get two more of those in this episode.
That's it. We reach a limit.
Yep. And
I can't imagine one of my clients talking to my concrete guy. I love him to death. He's an amazing subcontractor.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine the like his shirt's torn and he's got a nipple hanging out. My nice.
So we do. That's a great thing. We have job site expectations that we talk about with our trades. You know, type of music that's playing. Like you're gonna have a shirt on. Sounds like this guy did have a shirt on, but maybe not.
I'm thinking of only one specific.
Yeah. So, but that's a, you know, you don't want a nip slip. So I would.
Wasn't expecting the term nip slip in the podcast today. This podcast is always fun. I like this.
No, but for us, I think everyone, even we do, we enjoy going to work for and with a client that values us. And I think a client enjoys having us go work for them when they know that we value them. And we see this as like, it is partnership. So I think there's kind of two ways to approach subs in our industry. One is like, here's the plans, do it. It's on you. If you mess it up, it's your fault, you know, and tell me when it's done. And I know that sounds pretty harsh. And there's this other extreme of like you said, hey, we're kind of rolling out the red carpet here. Like we've gone ahead and we've placed where every can light's going and replaced where every center, every fixture is. And we've done countertop heights and all this stuff for you. You just come in and do it and check it. We do the same thing. Like you check it. And we found that so many more people in trades are like excited to come in and be like, frankly, they get to be like, hey, you did it wrong. You know, like, oh gosh, good catch, you know, or yeah, everything lines up. Great. Let's begin. So I think for us, having trades feel valued and a part of the team is really important. And I love the fact that our clients, they know our trades, you know, by name. I mean, a lot of them, well, again, to the level extent the client, that's an effort the client has to make, but we do take time to educate like everyone involved in the project, even clients. Like you can imagine the impact it would have on this group of guys, men and women coming in to work in your home if they felt valued. And so we have some clients that's like, they bring Christmas gifts. They bring like, you know, little just pick-me-ups, whether it's a big thing of donuts or whatever, but like these trades feel valued when they're on our jobs. We care to know who they are as people, what's going on. We understand that we are working with people life happens. So we try to show grace where we can, but again, we have a high expectation, and we want them to essentially participate with us when we do these projects. And I think job site conditions are a big one, you know, for us. I think we've talked about this, I think, before, but, you know, I love, like, as we're going into, we're coming out of summer, for example, like, our job sites are, they're comfortable. You know, we're in a hot, humid environment, and they could be roughing in a house, you know, when it's 90 degrees inside and hot and humid. Or
90 degrees outside.
Yeah, but which means it could be 90 degrees inside.
Sorry.
It's okay. If left unconditioned. But for us, it is, you know, it's 75 degrees inside. Yeah. It's comfortable, you know, in the winter, it's the opposite. It's going to be freezing. For us, where it's cold, you know, at like 30 degrees, 40 degrees, but it's 55, it's 60, you know? Well. Yeah. So I think, like, we get a lot of opportunity with our subs. Like, when we get into those types of seasons where it's like, we could go rough in this house or we could go to this one. But I think for us, I think you're hitting on this too, Luke. I think it comes down to valuing your subs. I mean, I feel like I could pick my phone up right now, and if I were to call any of them and say, hey, this is actually really important, I need you to do this, they'd go. And they know that we don't take that advantage. How many builders, it's an emergency, you've got to get here, and they get there, and the material's not even there. Nothing's even ready for us. You know, so if you can, you know, go out of your way to try to make them feel important and valued, I think it goes a long way.
They're more than just like, I don't know. I just think they're seen as such like a product or something to just help you generate this, you know, project that you have. Whereas if you're valuing them as a person or what, I mean, it's actually really simple, like treating them like people, getting them little, you know, I mean, it's very simple. Donuts, you know, on a Friday morning or something like that goes a long way.
Well, so we've talked before, I'll quickly say this, something I think that's different is that because the way we staff our projects, so we've got a project manager always there. There's normally an assistant project manager available as well. That we tell, like, if you need something, tell us. Like, we can probably go get it faster than you can possibly. So if it's like something you need right away, they just know that all we have to do is tell the manager and he'll figure out, all of a sudden it'll be here. Like, so it's like we try to make it a good work environment.
That's great.
I showed up to a job site one time to check on the roofers, and it was three guys that I'd worked with for a really long time. And I stopped and got Gatorade. It was the middle of summer and I brought Gatorade, and I came up the ladder with a bag in my hand, and probably the middle guy in terms of like seniority on the crew went, oh, you brought Gatorade. That totally makes up for the fact that it's 100 degrees out here. And I was like, just the fact that he knew that he could give me crap for trying to do something nice, like that relationship. He's like, that totally makes up for the fact that it's 100 degrees out here. I already forgot it's so hot out here that you brought that bag of Gatorades from the grocery store.
It's so hard to climb up that ladder.
But you guys totally segued into what I was going to talk about for the bidding process and including your subs in the bidding process. Yeah. It might be oversimplifying it, and I'm guessing you guys are going to have slightly different take or can expand upon it. Our bidding process is, I need you to tell me what it's going to cost to have you be involved with this project. Not what's the lowest that you can possibly deliver this for. It's, I want you to feel like we value what you're doing, and I want you to be involved in this project. What does that cost us? So I can include it so that it's part of the budget from the beginning, so that we don't have to go back to the client and go, yeah, we have a plumbing bid, but for the plumbers to do it the right way, we're going to need an extra $15,000. So how do you guys handle the bidding process with your subcontractor, Shane?
I have a very similar conversation. I use a baseball analogy where I say, hey, look, we're going to go through this together, determine your scope of work. I want you to price this in such a way that you have the time and space to do your best work. We're not out here to gouge anyone. We're going to try and hit a base hit, a single, a double. We're not swinging for the fences to hit a grand slam. I want you to be a part of this team, and I'm basically making a commitment to you that I will line you up with multiple base hits, singles, doubles, and I'll make sure you make that amount of profit. And you can have a very good career hitting singles and doubles. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that is completely fair. I don't think if a client wants to say that it's not fair that a sub trade makes, you know, a minimum amount of profit for their efforts, then it's, you know, the client doesn't value that relationship. And, you know, the one thing that can be tough is like when you've got very large scopes of work, where oftentimes I will have to work with a sub trade to say, hey, look, this is a big portion of the budget. I can't just have a proposal that says the cost of work is $200,000. I'm not telling you that's not what it costs, but I have to articulate this to the client, and I'm giving your sales pitch to them. help me understand how you're deriving that so that I can advocate for you to the client. And so, and you know, as I'm sure we're probably all very similar, we work with the same trades, the same team. I mean, I don't think if you're trying to perform at the best, you can do that without a core contingent of repeat players. Another good analogy that like one of my plumbers gave on the topic, he's like, think about if you're building a product, right? You know, the prototype is going to be the most timely and costly iteration of that. And if you're going to repeat that process to the point that you're mass producing something, it only gets faster and cheaper to do. He's like, well, every house, every custom home is a prototype. Yeah. So the best you can do is at least work with the same team of trades so that you guys become efficient with one another.
Yeah.
You know?
So that they know what to expect. Totally. They, oh, you know, Jake's guys are going to tell me that I'm only allowed to drill one hole for one thing in the air barrier because we have to seal it. Like, they know. Now, we have run into recently, we had a subcontractor effectively say, well, you know, my guys aren't as freed up to go and work on your stuff because, just to be honest, they don't like going to your job as much because it's substantially more complicated. And that was one of the starts of my project manager being like, great, we should work with somebody else.
Yeah.
Great. Like, if we're going to hear that your team is not invested in what we're doing, we're good.
Yeah.
You're clearly, if they're fighting over who has to go to our project because we've asked them to do things in a particular way, they're not our subcontractor. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud of my guys for immediately catching that and going, hey, I was on a job the other day and I met this guy and he seemed really excited about what we were doing, but we're not working with him yet. We should call him.
Yeah.
What's the time when you had to cut a subcontractor loose that you weren't expecting to have to cut loose? Do you have a moment where you were like, oh man, I thought they were the ones and that you want to share? You can share it with vagaries so that the person doesn't know who you're talking about. Or you can say company name. Look right into the camera and say company name and give their phone number.
We were slipping out a lot of work to air a building.
Thanks.
Thankfully, it's a rare occasion. I mean, hopefully for all of us. But the one I can remember was, it was years ago, but it's kind of recently come back around, which kind of gave me some delight, I'll say. But years ago, we were still kind of new at this, and we had a framer that just came in and kind of had a pretty rough attitude kind of towards the end of a project and was kind of just getting, we have our pay terms, you know, we pay every 2 weeks, and turning in a list of extras that we hadn't seen before, kind of a thing. And so we said, hey, we just need to go, I'm not saying no, we just need to go through this and talk through this because this is a list of things that have never been brought up to the project manager or us or the client. And long story short, I mean, just kind of to one of our office managers, just really, the office manager didn't even know anything about it, but just balled up an invoice and just threw it in our employee's face and was kind of like, pay me, and kind of just got out. And I had a follow-up conversation with them. I mean, honestly, voicemail, it's kind of back and forth and left it like, if you're not going to come back and talk through this and there's nothing else left to do. And fast forward, 6 years. And I'm grateful to be in the place we are in our market and the homes we do, where we actually get a lot of trades wanting to participate in our projects. And this guy calls up and instinctively, he walked into our office and the same office manager was like, immediately like, oh God, what is this guy doing here? And he had no idea that this guy had completely forgotten about it. We had moved offices and he came in, was like to do y'all's work, and you'll do really good work kind of a thing. And the guy was like, okay, like just leave it here and I'll talk to Jackson about it. And told me, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I called the guy up and said, I'm just surprised that, and so we kind of broke ties, but I said, I'm surprised that you'd want to kind of work with us again. He's like, I don't think we've worked together. I said, no, we have. So the last time you were in our office, you bundled up an invoice and threw it in our team's face. He immediately goes, well, I'd like to start off by apologizing about this.
At least he had the wherewithal to start.
It's been really rare that we've had to cut ties.
Wait, so which job is he framing for you right now?
I've never, other than that, we've really never, I've just learned you really, it's hard to completely cut someone off, in my opinion, there's got to be a pretty severe breach. Our market's small. I feel like when you burn a bridge, and I tell our team all this all the time, like we don't want to go around burning bridges because you know, something could happen, you know, all of a sudden. And like this guy, you know, having to come back and like get back out, you know, so even like we've had some hard times where we prefer, hey, we might not use this trade again. And that trade might call, but I don't call and say we're done. They might call and say, hey, we haven't done any work lately. What's going on? I'll say, oh, well, yeah, this is what we kind of ran into. Or the last jobs, you all said you didn't want to do this type of work anymore. And well, we didn't mean that. We just meant like we were frustrated. It's like, okay, well, you said you didn't want to work with us anymore, so we didn't want to bother you.
So we listened to what you said.
Yeah, yeah. So
I've had it to where we've tried a sub and then just not used them again.
Yeah.
So they did not perform well. And it's like, okay, we're never going to use them again. So therefore, that's not really like severing a relationship. I feel like that's just not using them.
Yeah.
But I have definitely had to sever that relationship. Like long-term, that long-term trade partner that you're having to sever a relationship with, like that's a tough conversation. But yeah, I've had to do that. Not many of those, but yeah, one in specific. Yeah.
But Shane?
Yeah, I've had to twice. In one instance where, you know, I'm sure like we all do, try and foster a real team cohesion on site. Everyone has to support one another, even if they're different trades, different businesses. There's a lot. It's super dynamic, fragmented environment. Had a trade that I did a number of projects with, but it just got to the point that he couldn't be a team player like everyone else could. It was just always complaints about how everyone else was impacting his work, but when his work would impact everyone else's efficiency, just there was no accountability there.
Here's plumber.
So that was tough. I mean, I didn't have a conversation with him. It wasn't plumbers. I've got some phenomenal plumbers. It wasn't plumbers, and I didn't quite honestly even have a conversation with it. It was just, you know, I just stopped feeding him work, you know, and he got the idea because what I didn't want to have is a project that's in construction blow up. I didn't want that conversation to be a confrontation. It's like, hey, I'm just going to like be as graceful to you as possible to make sure we finish this project smoothly. But in the back of my head, like no confrontation, no friction, no nothing. You've got no reason to complain. But like, this is going to be it for us. You know, this is the end of a good road, but like you're not compatible with the team cohesion we're trying to build here. That was the most recent instance. And, you know, it's unfortunate it had to work that way. I mean, but it's, you know, there's a lot of personality involved in this. It's all relationship driven. So
do you ever do like post project reviews with your trade partners, you know, like looking back on the project, how it went, how we could better it or anything like that?
No, never even thought to do it.
Yeah.
We'll ask our trades
or what they, or maybe give them the opportunity to say, hey, what do you expect anything else of me? What could I do better for you on the next project to make you more successful? Smart. Like, have you ever, I mean,
yeah, we definitely discuss like lessons learned along the way, not like where we've fallen short or made mistakes, but like, man, if we encounter this again, like we need to make sure we do this. We'll be so much better off because of it. So much more efficient. You know, let's make sure we get like this decision at this point in time, or had we been armed with this information soon enough, like it would have had this second, third. So there is some sort of like after action report, as we used to call them in the military, where we like debrief each other, but it's usually just trying to find ways to iterate and improve on the next one.
Yeah. You know, we have that in like offhanded conversation format. Like,
totally.
Hey, it's, I'm going to stop by and check up. Right. But I like the idea of like, we have a formal process. Like, hey, this, we're done with concrete. Do you want to sit down and talk about everything that happened with concrete? Like, I'll buy lunch.
To that same point,
I'll bring your check.
Something that I started doing that I found was super effective, that I was getting feedback from the trades. Like, hey, no one is doing this. Like, this is such a breath of fresh air. It's like when we would step off on a very like technical project. So for example, I had a basement I built that was in the water table. We had to dewater it. I mean, it's basically like you're building a boat in water, and it requires like 10 different trades to all be like, you know, synchronized very efficiently, and everyone's work relies on everyone else. And you bring them together for like, hey, before we step off on this operation together, it'd be the same thing like in my past, like in the military. It's like you wouldn't go into a military operation without first like briefing it to everyone. So we would have, you know, a pre-construction site meeting with every trade and talk through the whole sequence of maneuver. Hey, this is when you're stepping in. This is like when you're coming in. Like, what questions do you guys have? And I was so blown away at how many trades were like, we've never been brought in for this, like, you know, team meeting where every trade is there together.
Which, if you run a commercial project, that's the way commercial runs.
Totally.
But for some reason, on the residential side, people are like, ah, we don't need to meet. It's simple. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. You don't need a plan.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to do like a kickoff, like, get everybody, as many people, like before we'd start a home project, get as many of the trades together and we'd bring them in for like pizza and whatnot and just kind of just say, hey, here's when we're starting. Here's, you know, here's everybody. Here's the whole team. You know, only done it a couple times, but that was good. That was valuable. But
yeah. I had another lesson learned recently that, you know, full disclosure, had a waterproofing failure on a project. And as I'm sure you guys may or may not have experienced, like I was very quick to try and solve the problem and effectively like dive on their grenade and absorb all the shrapnel on behalf of my client and get the process done. Once we ultimately determined like, you know, whose ultimate liability and responsibility was, I had a really difficult time effectively clawing back like the financial cost of that from the trade I was working with. Uh-huh. And it was so severe and required so much effort that it felt like a breach of trust. It's like, man, I really misjudged our relationship with one another. Yeah. You know, that was very difficult for me to claw back a very small amount of cost that is rightfully yours to bear. What do we do if this is an order of magnitude greater? Like, can I trust you? We need to revisit that because if I'm going to continue bringing you into the fold, we need to square up on that. And I guess part of the lesson learned too is like before going into, you know, a warranty issue or something like that is to actually have that conversation. It's like, hey, here's, let's determine who's kind of like at, you know, liable or whose cost is this to bear or, you know, whether insurance is getting involved or not. I'm going to take this on. I'm going to kind of bear that burden, but almost to the point that like, we need to kind of square ourselves up and get this in writing so that when we're having this conversation 2 months down the road, it's, you know, we've already, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, I would actually, and I can only speak for like my market and who I work with, but I would imagine most subs would probably feel almost kind of assume that like my warranty is about my product. So let's say, I don't care what it is, an electrical wire, like it, there was a failure with an outlet that sparked, you know, and it created a, you know, say it was not a major damage thing, but it, you know, stained, you know, drywall, we had to cut some drywall out. I think most electricians would probably think, I got to just replace the outlet. Like, yeah. I'm not responsible for all the...
There. I'll pull new wire.
Yeah, we'll put a new wire in there for that, but it's like, hey, we got to cut all this out. Well, I think most subs, in my mind, because we are responsible for the whole project, almost think that's all on us. Mm-hmm. And so I think the only way to, like, which legally that is not the case, mm-hmm. But to where you get into this, like you said, after the fact, like, and I think all of us here, the moment we had an issue, we would all... We're there right away with the client. We're just getting it taken care of. Like, and the client can never hear about, frankly, it doesn't matter who's paying for it. It's going to get done as quickly as possible.
And you can't expect anyone else to do your job other than you.
So you're not
expecting your electrician to come in and QC, you know, and bring in 5-6 different trades responsible for that.
But it does. I mean, that alone is like, I'm like, man, I should probably more, you know, like almost just like, hey, like we've got, I think consistency in your trades is really important. Like you're saying, like you can talk with, you know, your next trade before the next job of like, hey, anything that we could do better from the last one that we learned on, or do we need to kind of look at the bid differently and how we, you know, what we're expecting? And, but the same way, if you have that trade consistency, I think that's going to, you know, ultimately lead to a lot more success. You could probably go back to a lot of those trades. Like I'm going to say me, I probably shouldn't like, hey, like just hypothetically, your roof leaks and it creates a, you know, it damages insulation and it damages, you know, sheetrock and it also leaks and we have a problem with staining carpet. Like, my gut is, you know, that's all on, like, technically on you. I'm going to spearhead it and get it all done, but we probably need to settle up on that, you know? And they might be like, well, I'd repair the shingles, you know, like, for sure.
I'm going to mm-hmm. stand behind my work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if a lot of them, and I think that's, I could be 100% wrong, but that's my gut, is a lot of trades might feel like, no, I'm responsible for my repairing my issue, not the whole thing. That was a good little. Mm-hmm.
I think I'll segue the conversation to kind of another tangent too, is when I'm constructing my team and a budget, I do exactly what you do. It's like, hey, I need to figure out your proposal and stuff so I can build into the budget. And I'm going to, you know, try and build the best team I can. And when I'm presenting that budget to a client, I'm effectively saying, you know, I want to be able to build with the best team, the best materials, the best techniques. That's theoretically should lower our long-term risk. You know, if we're doing it to the highest degree we know, that's going to allow me to offer less of a business fee. Like I'm going to charge less profit if theoretically I'm lowering long-term risk. So if we want to use a composition of trade partners that is maybe more suitable to your budget and you want to cut cost, well, that's just going to basically shift more risk onto me. I'm going to have to raise my fee as a result. Yeah. So would you rather have, on the whole, more of your dollars going into your build or into business structure, if that makes sense? So it's like, to me, I'm choosing getting the best out of the product and the workmanship and the materials all day and paying less business structure. And what they don't often understand is that there's that trade-off. It's like, this is not like we can't just manipulate this composition of trade partners without me making a reassessment of the risk I'm incurring, which ultimately means I'm having to raise my fee, you know? So it's a net negative for you. That's, you know, an obvious conversation, it seems, but oftentimes one that I don't think is like stated clearly enough, but I've made it a point to like use that in my rhetoric to backstop the team that I'm choosing to put on the project.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to wrap our conversation by sharing a piece of advice that an older builder gave me not too long after I got into business. I had to call a plumber back because we had a leak that had some damage. And I said something to Ron is the builder's name. I said, Ron, you work with this plumber. Have you ever had something like this happen before? And he leaned in real close and he said, talk to him about it. And then don't forget to ask him to bid something else. And it took a good 10 seconds for my like year two in business brain to go, oh, to make him think that he's going to get more work out of you if he takes care of it. And I was like, it is a really poignant piece of advice, though. If they think that this is a long-term relationship, we're all more likely to take better care of people if we think it's a long-term relationship, as insulting as it was to that plumber.
And that point is for contractors, not for clients.
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah, so. Stop calling and saying, we're going to do a kitchen next year, but we want to do a bathroom now. That doesn't work. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got more work for you.
Ed, this builder's roundtable became nothing but conversations about relationships for the most part.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that you guys decided to put your faith in this process again and share your thoughts with everybody. We had great success last time. I hope that everybody sees value in this type of conversation. I really do thank you guys for taking time out of your schedule to come and play on our little podcast with us.
Thank you.
Until next time, don't forget to like and subscribe. Don't forget to like and subscribe on YouTube and on the audio platform that you listen to. Thank you for watching. Again, thanks, guys.
Yeah,
thank you.
Have a good day.
Yeah.